You're such a good eater. You can't have dessert until you finish your food or until you eat your vegetables. And the thing that that ends up doing, though, is the child is not listening to their fullness signals. They're thinking, I'm going to push through. I want to have a happy plate. I want to be seen as a good little boy or girl. I want to please my caregiver. I want to eat all my food because the thing I really want is the dessert. And so they'll eat it all, whether they were hungry for it or not. And so it's little things like that over time that teach us not to listen to what our body's actually telling us.
There's so much shame and guilt around food and our bodies. We get it from the outside world, but we also experience it within ourselves. It can leave us feeling like we're just never enough. And that is why this was such a meaningful conversation with Katie Harvey. Katie Harvey is a Midwest girl, a non-diet dietitian, and the host of the Rebuilding Trust with Your Body podcast. She specializes in intuitive eating and helping women ditch dieting, stress less about food, and make peace with their bodies so they can feel comfortable in their own skin and live life more fully. Katie is all about eating the foods you love unapologetically without going overboard. She fully believes that you can eat for satisfaction while also honoring your health. This was a great conversation with Katie. I'm so honored to share it with you now. So excited to be joined by Katie Harvey. So thank you for being here today.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And this is going to be a great conversation. We're just chatting a little bit. And I know this is going to be something that impacts so many people, maybe isn't talked about, but as frequently. And so we're just talking about how beautiful it is to have a platform like a podcast to talk about some of those things that you don't hear as frequently out there. So what I want to dive into is just your backstory. How did you get into doing what you do today and helping the people that you help?
Yeah, it was kind of a one of like almost an accidental thing. So I went to school to become a dietitian, and I went straight through for that. So there was never any wavering there. I always knew that I had that interest in, you know, like science and health and the human body and all of that. And I thought that I would spend my career in oncology. I really had this interest in cancer, and I started out in the cancer research field, and we were doing these research studies with breast cancer survivors. And so it was kind of cool where we were doing research, but it was like with real people. So you got a feel for kind of that, you know, person to person aspect of it as well. And what I discovered during that is, so the types of studies we were doing were basically weight loss studies, because at the time it was showing that going through breast cancer treatment often caused weight gain, and that weight gain correlated with an increased risk of cancer recurrence. And so our thought process was, we're going to help these people lose weight, and therefore we're going to help prevent their cancer from coming back. The problem was, they would lose weight on our diet program, but then when we followed up with them about 6 months later, almost all of them had regained it. And when we checked their body composition and some of their other kind of health parameters, basically they were worse off by the time we were done with them than they were when we first started. And that was when it started to click for me that, like, this isn't ultimately helping people. And now we've got this group of like anxious women who feel terrible about their body image. They're worried about their cancer coming back. And that was when I first realized this idea that dieting does not work as a sustainable solution. It's this temporary thing that looks like it's working, but it's not a long-lasting thing. And I realized that I loved the psychology side of it. I loved working with individual people, talking about their relationship to food and their body. And so I made this pivot into the world of eating disorders, basically, is because that for dietitians is where we get to have those conversations, is people who are, you know, having disordered eating, they've spent their lifetime dieting, maybe they have a diagnosed eating disorder. And it was once I got into that space that I was like, this is what I am meant to be doing. And it's evolved from the private practice that I started with And now I have a virtual private practice and I teach programs online so I can connect with people all over the world.
It's amazing. And it's such a needed field because there's so many people who struggle with this and resonate with this. And I've struggled this with my life. I know many women who have struggled this with in their life, and there aren't always resources out there to help people with this. And like you said, the diets, it's like a band-aid on a bigger problem. It's not the thing. There's something deeper that's leading up to what's going on externally. We're just seeing the external things. And can you dive into that deeper when you talk about the things that you help people with and getting a better relationship with food, their bodies? Can you dive into some of the things that they maybe were lacking in that, or how to change their perception and mindset around that in order to get some healing?
Are you the person who says yes, even though you want to say no? Are you the person who puts your own needs and wants last behind the demands of your work and everyone else in your life? If you answered yes to any of these, you may be self-abandoning, and it does not come without a cost. If you want to know if you're self-abandoning for achievement, take my free quiz in the show notes.
For sure. Often what I'll look at with people is, you know, in what ways are they not feeling good about their relationship with food? What do they feel like they're struggling with? What are they worried about? And we'll start to kind of unpack that and peel back the layers. And a lot of times what we will land on is that body image very much ties into this, that for so many of us, the way that our relationship to food and our body gets kind of messed up is when we decide that we don't like the way we look. We want to lose some weight. We want to get healthier. And so we do the things that diet culture tells us we're supposed to do. And when you've done enough attempts at dieting, whether it's, you know, Weight Watchers, clean eating, keto, intermittent fasting, whatever, you do that enough times and you kind of lose touch with what normal eating actually looks like, what actually is healthy, what does your body need, and you start to not trust yourself around certain types of food. You feel like you can't have those in the house. You feel like you're never going to be able to be confident or accepting of your body unless you get to a certain goal weight or a certain size. And it's just this recipe for like living in shame and turmoil with food. And so what I help people with is to look at, okay, where's that coming from? And how do we get you back to a place where you have peace with food and where you can use food to work for your body and not against it, and where you can listen to your body, where you can trust yourself with food? And then the body image piece is, how do we help you feel comfortable in your own skin at the weight that your body is meant to be, where you're not battling against yourself and your biology for the rest of your life? And so that's a lot. And it can be complicated because there's so many additional things that will get wrapped up in all of this. But it can be such a life-changing experience, and it has so many ripple effects in other areas of our life. And I'm continually blown away at the way that this changes things for people for the better.
100%. Yeah. And I want to unpack some of those things because there are a lot of really great points there, and I want to dive into some of them. And one that really stuck out with me is that shame component. That's such a huge piece. Is there's a lot of messaging around that you're just not enough. And maybe if you're thin, you'll be enough. And can you dive into that more? Where are these messages coming from? And why are we internalizing them instead of recognizing them and dealing with them in a different way? Why is it coming out the way it is? And for so many women, especially dealing with this.
I mean, it comes from everywhere. I think that's a big part of it. And a lot of it is not just the world around us, but also from our doctors, from within our own families. A lot of times it's a multi-generational thing where maybe your mom has struggled with body shame and eating issues, and potentially she's trying to protect you from that. And so she basically taught you to diet or made you feel like you needed to control your weight. If you looked back generations, maybe grandma or aunts struggled with this. And so a lot of times it's something that, like, it just has always been that way from the moment we were born. Mm-hmm. Because if you're alive here and now, you were born into a world where diet culture has always existed and it's always been thriving all around us. And that pressure is there to be thin. And we are sent so many messages, so many ways that tell us that losing weight will make you happier, healthier, more successful. And even kids as young as kindergarten are already showing signs of being afraid of being fat. Some of them are dieting. By the time a kid is 10, about 50% of females have already been on a diet. So this is starting very young. And when I talk to people and I'll ask, like, how far back do you remember struggling with food or not liking your body? Most of them will tell me it was childhood. Mm-hmm. And part of the issue too is not just our own thoughts and feelings about our body, but the very real issue of weight stigma. So there's actual research that shows that people who do exist in higher weight bodies are treated worse. They are given worse health care. They are less likely to get a job. They are paid lower wages. They are thought to be lazy and unintelligent and all of these things that are associated with fatness. And so, of course, we don't want that for ourselves. We've been taught to fear that, and we've been taught to think that about people in larger bodies, and we've been therefore taught to think that about ourselves if we feel like we're too big or we weigh too much or, you know, we fit into that category. And so I think you'd be hard pressed to find very many people who don't struggle with some degree of body image shame or fear of weight gain.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know it's, I've lived with it much of my life until I opened up my eyes to seeing it differently. And just, I know so many of my friends and other people I've experienced, I just have had that. And you're right, through those subconscious messages that we've received through society and familiar family patterns. And it's just amazing how, when you talk about how young it is impacting people, that's just really impactful there, because you don't always have the tools to deal with it or acknowledge it. And then now you're living with that. And especially when you talk about that subconscious reprogramming, that's happening from ages 1 to 7, and that's getting ingrained in you. And so that's such a huge thing to recognize and hopefully start shifting that in people, because especially starting out in childhood, that's just, it's so sad to see that happening. One thing you talked about earlier too, is that disconnect that we have with food. And how we're not connected, we've kind of numbed ourselves to food and our signals within our body and recognizing how food makes us feel or if we're hungry and just tuning into ourselves. Can you dive into that a little bit more? Why are we so disconnected, and how do we start to connect ourselves so that we can look at food differently and approach it differently?
I absolutely love this topic. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. So we were all born, unless you have a very rare genetic condition, which we're not even going to cover here because it's irrelevant to most people statistically, we were born with the ability to know when we are hungry and to know when we are full. And that innate signaling is still within us. We need to learn to reconnect with it. The problem is, again, from a very young age, most of us are taught to ignore or suppress our hunger, and we're taught to override our fullness signals. So think about a few of the well-meaning things that maybe we do as parents. I've even caught myself saying some of these things, or that our parents said to us, where maybe it was getting praised for cleaning your plate, having a happy plate, being told, oh, you're such a good eater, you can't have dessert until you finish your food or until you eat your vegetables. And the thing that ends up doing, though, is the child is not listening to their fullness signals. They're thinking, I'm going to push through. I want to have a happy plate. I want to be seen as a good little boy or girl. I want to please my caregiver. I want to eat all my food because the thing I really want is the dessert. And so they'll eat it all, whether they were hungry for it or not. And so it's little things like that over time that teach us not to listen to what our body is actually telling us. And then if you end up doing some type of dieting or trying to change your eating in order to be healthier or change your body, the gist of that often is that you're trying to eat less and trick yourself into not being hungry or into thinking that you're full or to, you know, ignore your hunger until later. And so we'll do things like eating a bunch of low calorie foods or things that are like free if you're doing Weight Watchers, or I'm thinking of things like eating a lot of fruits and vegetables because they're low in calories but high in volume. Or when we went through the low fat era, it was like rice cakes and stuff like that. And now we're more in the era of like everything has to be protein, protein, protein. Mm-hmm. And so we get disconnected with like what food is even satisfying, and we'll train ourselves to achieve this level of fullness from eating a bunch of these like healthy foods or diet foods, but it's not necessarily like a comfortable level of fullness if we were eating more of a satisfying meal or more of a rounded meal with all the different food groups and everything. And so there's all those dieting tricks or intermittent fasting, telling yourself you can't eat until this time. So you're going to do everything you can to shut off and ignore your hunger until then. And then when you're finally allowed to eat, by golly, you're going to eat everything you can in that window of time, because that's your opportunity. And your body's biological drive for food is just going to take over. And you're going to want to keep eating and eating and eating, often past the point of comfortable fullness. And so we get so confused and stuck in our heads and doing all these things to try and trick ourselves. And that's where I think we get lost and disconnected and confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting how those fads come and go. And then there's research that comes out later, like, no, don't do that. You know, all the things that's recommended a few years later, it's like they're disproving it. And that's a trap for a lot of people, because you think you're doing the right thing. You know, people hear this, Oh, I'm doing the right thing, I'm healthy. Right.
They're genuinely trying to be healthier.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, then now you find out that that's not right. And now you're screwing up your system, and it signals, and this becomes such a, almost like a mind mess around that, and trying to figure out, how do you get back to just listening to your body again? So
even disrupt your like, your digestive process and your gut bacteria.
Yeah.
And so then a lot of people are like, well, I can't eat these foods because it upsets my stomach. And the thing with all that is, normal eating and including a wide variety of food is the thing that will fix all of that. But people are afraid to eat those foods because then they're not feeling good. And it's just a mess. You know, it's like, then they're trying to listen to their body and it's still not working.
Right. Yeah. And just as you're speaking too, one thing that gets in the way, I think, especially now in society, like, we're always going, we're constantly going, busy, you get home, you're just trying to do something quick, get it together. Can you talk about that? And as far as like the processed foods, the quick meals, and how maybe that's playing a role too in everything that's going on. And is that also contributing to just not listening to yourself and giving yourself what you need?
I definitely do think it is, because we're so, like you said, fast paced and go, 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 and trying to do a million things and be a million places. And wouldn't it be lovely if we could all come home and, like, you know, cook a multi-course meal every night? Although I would actually hate that, because I don't even like cooking. But that's not most people's reality, even if they wanted to. And so sometimes we are having to just choose from what's available to us. Mm-hmm. And maybe it is like the closest drive-through or restaurant, or we get home and it's just whatever we can throw together really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily what we actually wanted or what our body wanted, but you've got to eat. And so, like, at the end of the day, eating is the first most important thing. Like, eating is better than not eating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, with the like processed food and stuff like that, I think we've gone too far in our cultural judgment about it, because There is absolutely value in processed food. Like, processed food is what makes food shelf stable and accessible. It's what makes it affordable. It's what allows us to feed the world and billions of people. And there are times where that's absolutely what we need in order to be nourished and fed. And so I think processed food is a wonderful thing. And fresh food is also a wonderful thing. And there's a time and place for all of it. So I'm not big on labeling or fear mongering or any of that. I would say if all you're ever eating is some type of processed food, then maybe we want to look at why and what's driving that, and to get curious about how could we maybe bring in a bit more variety, because I think variety is usually one of the best things we can do for ourselves nutritionally.
Yeah,
But we
thank
also have to be practical,
Absolutely. And I was just going to say, thank you for saying that because it goes on two extremes of the spectrum. Like, you either have to eat like super clean, you have to have, two or three ingredients, know what they all are, or you have to like, or they do put the fear around anything that's processed.
And it's
And
like, can
so
we find the middle ground here? That this
that's
does not
it.
have to be either or, And you
Yeah.
don't have to spend all day on Sunday meal prepping in order to be healthy, because who has time or energy for that,
100%. And I think that's where that like disconnect, even in like the messaging, is like you're supposed to do all these things, but then as a real human, as a parent, as a working professional, like you're like, how am I supposed to do this? So then you feel like you're constantly failing at feeding yourself.
Exactly. Or
Yeah.
about feeding your kids. I know so
Yes.
many parents who feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just feeding my kid crap. I'm a terrible parent. Shame on me. And there's all of that then that gets mixed up in this, and we're judging ourselves. And that most of the time, judging ourselves and shaming ourselves is not helping us do anything more positive.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more. And but it still continues to happen. And then you still get those messages and like, oh, don't have any dyes in the food. And then you go to get the natural cereals and they're like $10 a box. And you're like, oh my gosh. It's like, yeah. So it becomes that like you feel like you're stuck, especially as like a parent or even just someone who's busy. You feel like you, no matter what you do, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it's that's a really tough place to be in. And so I appreciate you saying, the happy medium, like find something that works for you and have a little bit of everything and don't be fearful around those things. So I think that's a really important message
And to reassure
there.
people that, like, so I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in nutrition. Like, I've studied this for 6 years in college, and I can tell you without a shred of doubt that there is no single food that's inherently healthy or unhealthy. It's much more nuanced than that. And the minutiae of nutrition is not as big of a deal as we make it out to be. That, like, your body is not like hyper vigilant about food the way that we're taught to be in our society. And so for most of us, we don't need to be worrying about every little ingredient in our food or whether or not it's organic or any of that. Like, we just need to feed ourselves and listen to our bodies. And yes, have like some mindfulness towards nutrition, but we don't need to obsess about it in order to be healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's ironic because the stress and shame probably messes up your gut more than
Oh,
actually
for
the
sure.
little bit of like nutrient difference in trying to eat healthy. Like, so yeah, I mean, that's huge. And just going off of that, like, I would love for you to talk about like perfectionism and high achievement and those, the people like me who are those go-getters constantly going and how that plays a role in like accentuated shame, guilt, feeling like you never do enough, and then how that works into like your relationship with food.
And I so relate to this because, I put myself in that category as well. And it, what we do know from research is that it actually does, people who have kind of that type of personality profile or that temperament, is it correlates with increased risk of disordered eating and eating issues and body shame, because we start to apply that same mentality towards our food and our exercise and our body. And we feel like if we're not doing all the things and we're not getting the gold star and the A plus and all of that, that we're failing and we're not doing enough. And then that can often also be like, in not in contrast, but like how do you fit that in when you're also trying to be high achieving in every other area of your life? Like at a certain point, there is only so much time and energy to go around, and we can work ourselves to exhaustion. And, you know, I think that it really sets people up to feel like I'm not doing all of the things perfectly like I should be. There's also a lot that I hear in the kind of personal development space where you're seeing a lot of this like biohacking and all of the like athletic greens and these special like red light thing, all this wellness stuff that like you're supposed to be doing because self-care and morning routine and blah, 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 blah. And it's like this additional pressure to be doing all of this stuff. And it's an impossible standard to live up to. And most of it's nonsense anyway. On my podcast, I have this entire segment that I call Wellness Woo, where I'll take things like that and break down why it's absolute nonsense and you don't need to waste your time and money on it. But I think it appeals to the person who's a high achiever, who wants to do things right, who wants to take care of their body, who wants to be seen as healthy. And there is, it's almost like we create this idealized version of ourselves in our minds that we need to be doing that so that we are healthy and doing self-care and all the things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot of times that high achievement, the doing is your comfort zone. So you just want to like, just tell me what I can do, how I can fix it. But really it's diving deeper. Like, what are the beliefs that are causing you to feel like you have to constantly do things or you're not enough? And that's where it's uncomfortable for many people to dive into. Like, what's driving this? It's a lot of times it's just easier to like quiet it down by throwing another thing at it rather than diving into like your deep rooted core of like those subconscious beliefs that are actually driving that behavior. So it's, yeah, it can be really challenging for somebody who maybe doesn't even recognize that's what you're doing. And like, you're constantly going like, just giving the next quick fix. But for a lot of these things, especially eating disorders, there's a deeper rooted cause of why you're using food and the relationship around food to self-soothe in a way, but there's something deeper there that's going on that isn't being addressed because you wouldn't be doing these behaviors. So the behavior is just the external version of what's actually going on internally.
It's more of the symptom of the issue. And it's like, until you slow down, which is super uncomfortable for people who are high achieving go-getters, until you slow down and get quiet with yourself or work with a therapist to understand what's going on deeper inside, it's like whack-a-mole where we'll just keep kind of like jumping to the next thing that makes us feel like we're doing something productive. And we never get to the root of that. But it is that slowing down and doing that internal work of healing that will allow us to finally like take that deep breath and exhale. And it doesn't mean we have to let go of the pursuit of excellence or ambition, but can we channel that in a way that's actually life enhancing and expansive and aligns with our values versus feeling like we're just on this hamster wheel for the rest of our lives and we're exhausted and we're like at our breaking point at any moment.
100%. Absolutely. And it is trying to do all the things at 100%. And you're human, you know, you can't. And if you're going to look at everything that's lacking, there's always going to be something that's lacking instead of looking at what you do have. So completely agree with that. And one thing I want to get back into is when we talk about that connection, and I know you talk a lot about intuitive eating, can you talk about how can you start to cultivate some intuitive eating? Because I know this is such a big thing and it's maybe one of those pieces that if someone has never heard of it or has never even done it, it might be one of those things that you can start to really cultivate a connection with yourself.
Absolutely. Because it's sort of a framework that we can like sink our teeth into. And again, I had a client I was talking to yesterday and we were talking about intuitive eating. And I said, well, why don't you get a copy of the workbook and we can kind of go through that. She's like, oh my gosh, you just gave me homework. I love this. I am all
about it. That's funny. High achiever there.
Exactly. High achiever. Yes. it's great though that we have something that allows us to use an evidence-based, research-based paradigm and philosophy to tune back into our bodies. And so the gist of intuitive eating is it's about not just listening to your hunger and fullness, but also really getting deeply connected with what does your body want, what's satisfying to you, what does your body need in order to feel and function well. And part of the intuitive eating framework is also exploring how do we cope with emotions and looking at body image, as well as how do we move our bodies and what does exercise look like for us, and gentle nutrition and addressing our health concerns. So it's this really beautiful and kind of robust way of approaching food and our bodies and health. And sometimes you'll hear it referred to as being like anti-diet or non-diet, because it's kind of the opposite of dieting. And for a lot of people who get to their breaking point with dieting or with disordered eating, and they're just like, I can't keep doing this anymore, that's when they'll stumble into intuitive eating. And it's like the light bulb goes off, like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been needing. Mm-hmm. One pitfall that people often stumble into when they're initially working on intuitive eating is they'll assume that they know what it means just by hearing that phrase. And they won't understand that there are these 10 principles that go with it, and they all fit together like pieces of a puzzle. And some people are like, wait, there's principles? What are you talking about? These come from a book. There's a book called Intuitive Eating. That's where this comes from. So highly recommend starting there. But we don't want to just wing it, because often that becomes impulsive eating instead of intuitive eating. And people will just start eating whatever I want, whenever I want, and thinking that's intuitive. But just because a thought of food popped into your head doesn't mean that that's what your body needed right now, or that you're even hungry. So we want to slow down more and practice that mindful awareness of what your body telling you. Mm-hmm. And in terms of like, where do you even begin? This part's a little counterintuitive, but the way that I coach people is that we actually want to start with eating at consistent increments throughout the day, and almost eating on a schedule with flexibility. Like, this is not something to be rigid with, but if we can give our body some consistent opportunities to eat every like 2 to 4 hours or so, it gives us those checkpoints to check in with our body and to prevent ourselves from getting ravenously hungry, because that becomes a setup to just want to inhale a whole bunch of food because we're like desperate for it. So we want to try to eat when we're more at like a moderate level of hunger, and that way we can stop at a comfortable level of fullness. And there's this great tool called a hunger fullness scale. So it's this visual scale of 1 to 10 that can allow us to visualize where we're at. Like, am I hungry? Am I neutral? Am I full? And we can start to picture almost like the gas gauge in your car. Like, okay, where am I at and how much food do I need? And so by eating on a schedule and checking in with your body to gauge where you're at, you'll start to get in touch with what does your hunger feel like? How does it show up in your body? And you'll get connected with what type of food would be really satisfying and fulfilling right now. And you'll start to know what it is that your body needs. And it's a process, and it can be kind of scary at first because people are like, okay, so I'm just going to like have a free for all with food. That's not the intention, but there is a degree of like letting go and loosening the reins. And that part, sometimes we do want like the same foods that we used to think of as off limits over and over again. And we kind of have to get that part out of our system and show ourselves like, yes, you can have this food. You don't have to restrict it. Mm-hmm. And eventually you won't always want it every single day anymore. But it's part of trusting that process and trusting that, you know, if eventually, like, let's say one of your foods that you wouldn't let yourself eat was like mac and cheese. If all you ate every day for every meal was mac and cheese, eventually you would get tired of it and your body would be like, can we just have, you know, some meat or a salad or some soup or something? So you have to ride that out. But I do promise you that if you trust the process and if you understand the process, it works. There's over 200 studies showing that it works, not just for making peace with food, but for improving health as well.
I love that. And then just that word trust, trusting the process, trusting yourself, because so much around food is about control, especially with eating disorders. It's about controlling something in your life because you feel like you don't have that control. So if you can learn to cultivate that trust, there's not going to be that void of, I don't have control. Now you have trust in place of feeling like you need
absolute control. Which is such a different, like trusting your body, trusting yourself.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like you're on the same team as your body instead of fighting against your body and trying to control it. Because at the end of the day, biology is usually going to win. So when we're fighting against our biology, at some point that's going to backfire on us.
Absolutely. And then how exhausting that is, you know, if you're already going all the time as like maybe high achieving mom or, you know, a business person, and now you're fighting against your own body, it's exhausting. There's only so much energy. And if you're devoting so much energy to controlling what's going on in your body and fixated on that, you can't possibly show up for the other parts of your life fully. So it's just like you said, you help one part and everything elevates because of that. And it seems to work other parts out in a way that's beautiful and not feeling so like fighting and tension and restrictive for yourself. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
For someone who's listening right now and maybe has been struggling with this and they love the idea of it, but they're like, how do I even start? What's something they could do right now in this moment that could help them get started to get a foothold in moving forward?
I would say two things. Mm-hmm. I would start with trying to pause and check in with yourself before you eat and to just simply ask yourself the question, am I hungry? The funny thing is there might be moments where you don't know the answer to that question because you're like, I don't know. I've lost touch with what hunger feels like, or I don't know if I'm really hungry. Maybe I'm thirsty. Diet culture told me that sometimes when you're hungry, it's really thirst, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the act of slowing down and checking in is such a valuable process. And then from there, I would say trying to honor the hunger when you are hungry and to let yourself eat what would be satisfying. So that would be the first thing. And then the other thing I would highly encourage is if you want to understand intuitive eating and how it really works, would be to read the book. It's by Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch. You can get it on Amazon. It's not too expensive. You can also do the audio version, but I think it's really important that you understand the ins and the outs of how it's intended to work so that you don't accidentally misapply the concept.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that because it's just so helpful for somebody who's like, okay, how do I even do any of this? Yeah. So those are two great steps to get a foothold, to start seeing things differently. And that's all you need. You don't have to have it all figured out. You just have to have the next step.
Yeah, you don't have to go like clean out your pantry or like go do like a whole new list of foods. Like a lot of it is just like the psychological side of understanding and shifting your belief system. That in and of itself will start to change so much for you.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, your mind is your driving force and that's totally it. You know, you start shifting that at your whole life shift. So thank you for sharing that. And for someone who wanted to dive in deeper and really connect with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, I hang out mostly on Instagram. So you can find me there. It's at katieharvey.rd. I also have, if they wanted a free guide that has the hunger scale in it that I was mentioning earlier and like those steps for reconnecting with your hunger, they can grab that at nondietacademy.com/hunger. That would be a great tool as kind of a getting started type of thing.
Yeah, amazing. I'll put everything in the show notes too. So if you're listening to this, definitely check out the show notes and connect with Katie. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing your insight into this, into such a valuable topic and something that is so impactful for so many people. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I'm just so thrilled that you're having these conversations and that you're, you know, opening this topic up because it's not talked about very often. And so I hope that there are people in your audience who are like, oh my gosh, this is like exactly what I need.
That's it. And that's really the beauty of it is just having these conversations. Cause I can tell you 20 years ago, when I was going through a lot of this, there weren't conversations like this. There was nothing. You didn't know where to go. So this is so valuable, especially if someone's listening and you're struggling with this, please take these steps and tools and start moving yourself forward and reach out to resources and reach out to Katie for some help. So thank you again.
Like you don't have to struggle the rest of your life with your body image or with your eating. Like there are different ways to approach it. And sometimes just hearing that is like the hope that people need.
Absolutely. That really is it. And because sometimes when you're so right. Sometimes you're in the thick of it, you do think this is going to be forever. You're going to be stifled for this. And I can tell you it's not. I've gone through my own struggles. It's not. You can live a beautiful life after all this. So there's healing that is always possible. So thank you for that. That's such an inspiring thing to someone that maybe does feel like this is long lasting. So thank you. And again, thank you for everyone who's listened today. And if you haven't done so already, please connect with Katie, subscribe to the podcast, and then share this episode with someone who you might think needs to hear this. So thank you again so much for being here today.
Thanks, Kelly.
Hey there. Thanks for listening to this episode. I hope it serves you well to start rewiring your brain to create the life you desire. If you found value in this, please share it with a friend and tag me on Facebook or Instagram at Dr. Kelly Kessler.